Carlos Castaneda's The Second Ring of Power, the last chapter, the second attention, chapter 6, the second attention, and part 2. And at in the comment notes, I'm going to leave a song to sum up this book. So, and thanks for listening along, everybody who made it all the way. She then made a piercing bird call. A moment later, the little sisters came out of the house and sat down to gaze with her. Their gazing mastery was obvious. Their bodies acquired a strange rigidity. They did not seem to be breathing at all. Their stillness was so contagious that I caught myself half closing my eyes and staring into the hills. Gazing had been a true revelation to me. In performing it, I had corroborated some important issues of Don Juan's teachings. Lagorda had delineated the task in a definitely vague manner. To zoom in on it was more a command than a descriptive of a process than a description of a process. And yet it was a description, providing the one essential requirement had been fulfilled. Don Juan had called that requirement stopping the internal dialogue. From Lagorda's statements about gazing, it was obvious to me that the effect Don Juan had been after in making them gaze was to teach them to stop the internal dialogue. Lagorda had expressed it as quieting down the thoughts. Don Juan had taught me to do that very same thing, although he made me follow the opposite path. Instead of teaching me to focus my view as gazers did, he taught me to open it, to flood my awareness by not focusing my sight on anything. I had to sort of feel with my eyes everything in the 180-degree range in front of me while I kept my eyes unfocused just above the line of the horizon. It was very difficult for me to gaze because it entailed reversing that training. As I tried to gaze, my tendency was to open up. The effort of keeping that tendency in check, however, made me shut off my thoughts. Once I had turned off my internal dialogue, it was not difficult to gaze as Lagorda had prescribed. Don Juan had asserted time and time again that the essential feature of his sorcery was shutting off the internal dialogue. In terms of the explanation Lagorda had given me about the two realms of attention, stopping the internal dialogue was an operational way of describing the act of disengaging the attention of the tonal. Don Juan had also said that once we stop our internal dialogue, we also stop the world. That was an operational description of the inconceivable process of focusing our second attention. He had said that some part of us is always kept under lock and key because we are afraid of it, and that our reason, that part of us was like an insane relative that we keep locked in a dungeon. That part was, in Lagorda's terms, our second attention. And when it finally could focus on something, the world stopped. Since we, as average men, not only the attention of the tonal, it is not too far-fetched to say that once that attention is canceled, the world indeed has to stop. The focusing of our wild, untrained second attention has to be perforce terrifying. Don Juan was right in saying that the only way to keep that insane relative from bursting in on us was by shielding ourselves with our endless internal dialogue. Lagorda and the little sisters stood up after perhaps 30 minutes of gazing. Lagorda signaled me with her head to follow them. They went to the kitchen. Lagorda pointed to a bench for me to sit on. She said that she was going up the road to meet the Gineros and bring them over. She left through the front door. The little sisters sat around me. Lydia volunteered to answer anything I wanted to ask her. I asked her to tell me about her gazing into Don Juan's power spot, but she did not understand me. I am a distance and shadow gazer, she said. After I became a gazer, the narwhal made me start all over again and had me gaze this time at the shadows of leaves and plants and trees and rocks. Now I never look at anything anymore. I just look at their shadows. Even if there is no light at all, there are shadows. Even at night, there are shadows. Because I am a shadow gazer, I am also a distance gazer. I can gaze at shadows even in the distance. The shadows in the early morning don't tell much. The shadows rest at that time. It is useless to gaze very early in the day. Around 6 in the morning, the shadows wake up, and they are best around 5 in the afternoon. Then they are fully awake. What do the shadows tell you? Everything I want to know. They tell me things because they have heat or cold, or because they move, or because they have colors. I don't know yet all the things that colors and heat could mean. The narwhal left it up to me to learn. How do you learn? In my dreaming. Dreamers must gaze in order to do dreaming, and then they must look for their dreams in their gazing. For example, the narwhal made me gaze at the shadows of rocks, and then, in my dreaming, I found out that those shadows had light. So I looked for the light in the shadows from then on until I found it. Gazing and dreaming go together. It took me a lot of gazing at shadows to get my dreaming of shadows going. And then it took me a lot of dreaming and gazing to get the two together and really see in the shadows what I was seeing in my dreaming. See what I mean? Every one of us does the same. Rose's dreaming is about trees because she's a tree gazer. And Josephina's is about clouds because she's a cloud gazer. They gaze at trees and clouds until they match up with their dreaming. Rosa and Josephina shook their heads in agreement. What about LaGorda? I asked. She's a flea gazer, Rosa said, and all of them laughed. LaGorda doesn't like to be bitten by fleas, Lydia explained. She is formless and can gaze at anything, but she used to be a rain gazer. What about Pablito? He gazes at women's crotches, Rose answered, with a deadpan expression. They all laughed. Rosa slapped me on the back. I understand that since he's your partner, he's taking after you, she said. They banged on the table and shook the benches with their feet as they laughed. Pablito was a rock gazer, Lydia said. Nestor is a rain and plant gazer, and Benigno is a distance gazer. But don't ask me any more about gazing, because I will lose my power if I tell you more. How come LaGorda tells me everything? LaGorda lost her form, Lydia replied. Whenever I lose mine, I'll tell you everything too. But by then, you won't care to hear it. You care only because you're stupid like us. The day we lose our form, we'll all stop being so stupid. Why do you ask so many questions when you know all this? Rosa asked. Because he's like us, Lydia said. He's not a true narwhal. He's still a man. She turned and faced me. For an instant, her face was hard and her eyes were piercing and cold. But her expression softened as she spoke to me. You and Pablito are partners, she said. You really like him, don't you? I thought for a moment before I answered. I told her that somehow I trusted him implicitly. For no overt reason at all, I had a feeling of kinship with him. You like him so much that you fouled him up, she said in an accusing tone. On that mountaintop where you jumped, he was getting to his second attention by himself, and you forced him to jump with you. I only held him by the arm, I said in protest. A sorcerer doesn't hold another sorcerer by the arm, she said. Each of us is very capable. You don't need any of us three to help you. Only a sorcerer who sees and is formless can help. On that mountaintop where you jumped, you were supposed to go first. Now Pablito is tied to you. I suppose you intended to help us in the same way. God, the more I think about you, the more I despise you. Rosa and Josephina mumbled their agreement. Rosa stood up and faced me with rage in her eyes. She demanded to know what I intended to do with them. I said that I intended to leave very soon. My statement seemed to shock them. They all spoke at the same time. Lydia's voice rose above the others. She said that the time to leave had been the night before, and that she had hated it the moment I decided to stay. Josephina began to yell obscenities at me. I felt a sudden shiver and stood up and yelled at them to be quiet with a voice that was not my own. They looked at me horrified. I tried to look casual, but I had frightened myself as much as I had frightened them. At that moment, LaGorda stepped out to the kitchen as if she had been hiding in the front room waiting for us, to start a fight. She said that she had warned all of us not to fall into one another's webs. I had to laugh at the way she scolded us, as if we were her children. She said that we owed respect to each other, that respect among warriors was a most delicate matter. The little sisters knew how to behave like warriors with each other, so did the Gineros among themselves. But when I would come into either group, or when the two groups got together, all of them ignored their warriors' knowledge and behaved like slobs. We sat down. LaGorda sat next to me. After a moment's pause, Lydia explained that she was afraid I was going to do to them what I had done to Pablito. LaGorda laughed and said that she would never let me help any of them in that manner. I told her that I could not understand what I had done to Pablito that was so wrong. I had not been aware of what I had done, and if Nestor had not told me, I would never have known that I had actually picked Pablito up. I even wondered if Nestor had perhaps exaggerated a bit, or that maybe he had made a mistake. LaGorda said that the witness would not make a stupid mistake like that, much less exaggerate it, and that the witness was the most perfect warrior among them. Sorcerers don't help one another like you help Pablito, she went on. You behave like a man in the street. The Nawal had taught us all to be warriors. He said that a warrior had no compassion for anyone. For him, to have compassion meant that you wished the other person to be like you, to be in your shoes, and you lent a hand just for that purpose. You did that to Pablito. The hardest thing in the world is for a warrior to let others be. When I was fat, I worried because Lydia and Josephina did not eat enough. I was afraid that they would get ill and die from not eating. I did my utmost to fatten them, and I meant only the best. The impeccability of a warrior is to let them be and to support them in what they are. That means, of course, that you trust them to be impeccable warriors themselves. But what if they are not impeccable warriors, I said? Then it's your duty to be impeccable yourself and not say a word, she replied. The Nawal said that only a sorcerer who sees and is formless can afford to help anyone. That's why he helped us and made us what we are. You don't think that you can go around picking people up off the street to help them, do you? Don Juan had already put me face to face with the dilemma that I could not help my fellow beings in any way. In fact, to his understanding, every effort to help on our part was an arbitrary act guided by our own self-interest alone. One day when I was with him in the city, I picked up a snail that was in the middle of the sidewalk and tucked it safely under some vines. I was sure that if I had left it in the middle of the sidewalk, people would sooner or later have stepped on it. I thought that by moving it to a safe place, I had saved it. Don Juan pointed out that my assumption was a careless one, because I had not taken into consideration two important possibilities. One was that the snail might have been escaping a sure death by poison under the leaves of that vine, of the vine. And the other possibility was that the snail had enough personal power to cross the sidewalk. By interfering, I had not saved the snail, but only made it lose whatever it had so painfully gained. I wanted, of course, to put the snail back where I had found it, but he did not let me. He said that it was the snail's fate that an idiot had crossed its path and made it lose its momentum. If I left it where I had put it, it might be able to gather enough power to go wherever it was going. I thought I had understood his point. Obviously, I had only given him a shallow agreement. The hardest thing for me was to let others be. I told them the story, and Lagorda patted me on the back. We're all pretty bad, she said. All five of us are awful people who don't want to be understand. I've gotten rid of most of my ugly side, but not all of it yet. We are rather slow, and in comparison to the Gennaros, we are gloomy and domineering. The Gennaros, on the other hand, are all like Gennaro. There is very little awfulness in them. The little sisters shook their heads in agreement. They are the ugliest among us, Lydia said. I don't think we're that bad in comparison to you. Oh, you are the ugliest among us, Lydia said to me. I don't think we are bad in comparison to you. But Gorda giggled and tapped my leg as if telling me to agree with Lydia. I did, and all of them laughed like children. We remained silent for a long time. I'm getting now to the end of what I had to tell you, Lagorda said all of a sudden. She made all of us stand up. She said that they were going to show me the Toltec warrior's power stand. Lydia stood by my right side, facing me. She grabbed my hand with her right hand, palm to palm, but without interlocking the fingers. Then she hooked my arm right above the elbow with her left arm and held me tightly against her chest. Josephina did exactly the same thing on my left side. Rosa stood face to face with me and hooked my arms under my armpits and grabbed my shoulders. Lagorda came from behind me and embraced me at my waist, interlocking her fingers over my navel. All of us were about the same height, and they could press their heads against my head. Lagorda spoke very softly behind my left ear, but loud enough for all of us to hear her. She said that we were going to try to put our second attention in the Nawal's power place without anyone or anything prodding us. This time, there was no teacher to aid us or allies to spur us. We were going to go there just by the force of our desire. I had the invincible urge to ask her what I should do. She said that I should let my second attention focus on what I had gazed at. She explained that the particular formation which we were in was a Toltec power arrangement. I was at that moment the center and the binding force of the four corners of the world. Lydia was the east, the weapon that the Toltec warrior holds in his right hand. Rosa was the north, the shield harnessed on the front of the warrior. Josephina was the west, the spirit catcher that the warrior holds in his left hand. And Lagorda was the south, the basket which the warrior carries on his back and where he keeps his power objects. She said that the natural position of every warrior was to face the north, and since he had to hold the weapon, the east, in his right hand, but the direction that we ourselves had to face was the south, slightly toward the east. Therefore, the act of power that the Nawal had left for us to perform was to change directions. She reminded me that one of the first things that the Nawal had done to us was to turn our eyes to facing the southeast. That had been why he had enticed our second attention to perform the feat which we were going to attempt then. There were two alternatives to that feat. One was for all of us to turn to face the south using me as an axis, and in so doing, change around the basic value and function of all of them. Lydia would be the west, Josephina the east, Rosa the south, and she the north. The other alternative was for us to change our direction and face the south, but without turning around. That was the alternative of power, and it entailed putting on our second face. I told Lagorda that I did not understand what our second face was. She said that we had been entrusted by the Nawal to try getting the second attention of all of us bundled up together, and that every Toltec warrior had two faces and faced two opposite directions. The second face was the second attention. Lagorda suddenly released her grip. All the others did the same. She sat down again and motioned me to sit by her side. The little sisters remained standing. Lagorda asked me if everything was clear to me. It was, and at the same time, it was not. Before I had time to formulate a question, she blurted out that one of the last things the Nawal had entrusted her to tell me was that I had to change my direction by summoning up my second attention together with theirs and putting on my power face to see what was behind me. Lagorda stood up and motioned me to follow her. She led me to the door of their room. She gently pushed me into that room. Once I had crossed the threshold, Lydia, Rosa, Josephina, and she joined me in that order. And then Lagorda closed the door. The room was very dark. It did not seem to have any windows, and Lagorda grabbed me by the arms and placed me in what I thought was the center of the room. All of them surrounded me. I could not see them at all. I could only feel them flanking me on the four sides. After a while, my eyes became accustomed to the darkness. I could see that the room had two windows, which had been blocked off by panels. A bit of light came through them, and I could distinguish everybody. Then all of them held me the way they had done a few minutes before, and in perfect unison, they placed their heads against mine. I could feel their hot breaths all around me. I closed my eyes in order to sum up the image of my gazing. I could not do it. I felt very tired and sleepy. My eyes itched terribly. I wanted to rub them, but Lydia and Josephina held my arms tightly. We stayed in that position for a very long time. My fatigue was unbearable, and finally I slumped. I thought that my knees had given in. I had the feeling that I was going to collapse on the floor and then fall asleep right there. But there was no floor. In fact, there was nothing underneath me. My fright upon realizing that was so intense that I was fully awake in an instant. A force greater than my fright, however, pushed me back into the sleepy state again. I abandoned myself. I was floating with them like a balloon. It was as if I had fallen asleep and was dreaming in that dream I saw a series of disconnected images. We were no longer in the darkness of their room. There was so much light that it blinded me. At times I could see Rose's face against mine out of the corner of my eyes. I could also see Lydia's and Josephina's. I could feel their foreheads pressed against my ears. And then the image would change, and I would see instead Lagorda's face against mine. Every time that happened, she would put her mouth on mine and breathe. I did not like that at all. Some force in me tried to get loose. I felt terrified. I tried to push them all away. The harder I tried, the harder they held me. That convinced me that Lagorda had tricked me and had finally led me into a death trap. But contrary to the others, Lagorda had been an impeccable player. The thought that she had played an impeccable hand made me feel better. At one point, I did not care to struggle any longer. I became curious about the moment of my death, which I believed was imminent, and I let go of myself. I experienced then an unequaled joy, an exuberance that I was sure was to be the herald of my end, if not my death itself. I pulled Lydia and Josephina even closer to me. At that moment, Lagorda was in front of me. I did not mind that she was breathing in my mouth. In fact, I was surprised that she stopped then. The instant she did, all of them also stopped pressing their heads on mine. They began to look around, and by doing so, they also freed my head. I could move it, Lydia, Lagorda, and Josefina were so close to me that I could see only through the opening in between their heads. I could not figure out where we were. One thing I was certain of, we were not standing on the ground. We were in the air. Another thing I knew for sure was that we had shifted our order. Lydia was to my left, and Josefina was to my right. Lagorda's face was covered with perspiration, and so were Lydia's and Josefina's. I could only feel Rosa behind me. I could see her hands coming from my armpits and holding on to my shoulders. Lagorda was saying something I could not hear. She enunciated her words slowly, as if she were giving me time to read her lips, but I got caught up in the details of her mouth. At one instant, I felt that the four of them were moving me. They were deliberately rocking me. That forced me to pay attention to Lagorda's silent words. I clearly read her lips this time. She was telling me to turn around. I tried, but my head seemed to be fixed. I felt that someone was biting my lips. I watched Lagorda. She was not biting me, but she was looking at me as she mouthed her command to turn my head around. As she talked, I also felt that she was actually licking my entire face or biting my lips and cheeks. Lagorda's face was somehow distorted. It looked big and yellowish. I thought that perhaps, since the whole scene was yellowish, her face was reflecting that glow. I could almost hear her ordering me to turn my head around. Finally, the annoyance of the biting was causing me made me shake my head. And suddenly the sound of Lagorda's voice became clearly audible. She was in back of me, and she was yelling at me to turn my attention around. Rosa was the one who was licking my face. I pushed her away from my face and my forehead. Rosa was weeping. Her face was covered with perspiration. I could hear Lagorda's voice behind me. She said that I had exhausted them by fighting them and that she did not know what to do to catch our original attention. The little sisters were whining. My thoughts were crystal clear. My rational process, however, were not deductive. I knew things quickly and directly, and there was no doubt of any sort in my mind. For instance, I knew immediately that I had to go back to sleep again, and that would make us plummet down. But I also knew that I had to let them bring us to their house. I was useless for that. If I could focus my second attention at all, it had to be on a place that Don Juan had given me in northern Mexico. I had always been able to picture it in my mind like nothing else in this world. I did not dare to sum up that vision. I knew, because I knew we would have ended up there. I thought that I had to tell Lagorda what I knew, but I could not talk. Yet some part of me knew that she understood. I trusted her implicitly, and I fell asleep in a matter of seconds. In my dream, I was looking at the kitchen of their house. Pablito, Nestor, and Benicio were there. They looked extraordinarily large, and they glowed. I could not focus my eyes on them because a sheet of transparent plastic material was in between them and myself. Then I realized that it was as if I were looking at them through a glass window, while somebody was throwing water on the glass. Finally, the glass shattered and hit me in the face. Pablito was drenching me with a bucket. Nestor and Benicio were also standing there. Lagorda, the little sisters, and I were sprawled on the ground in the yard behind the house. The Gineros were drenching us with buckets of water. I sprang up. Either the cold water or the extravagant experience I had just been through had invigorated me. Lagorda and the little sisters put on a change of clothes, and the Gineros must have laid out in the sun. My clothes had also been neatly laid on the ground. I changed without a word. I was experiencing a peculiar feeling that seems to follow the focusing of the second attention. I could not talk, neither can I. Or rather, I could talk, but I did not want to. My stomach was upset. Lagorda seemed to sense it and pulled me gently to the area in the back of the fence. I became ill, and Lagorda and the little sisters were affected the same way. I returned to the kitchen area and washed my face. The coldness of the water seemed to restore my awareness. Pablito, Nestor, and Benigno were sitting around the table. Pablito had brought his chair. He stood up and shook hands with me. Then Nestor and Benigno did the same. Lagorda and the little sisters joined us. There seemed to be something wrong with me. My ears were buzzing. I felt dizzy. Josefina stood up and grabbed onto Rosa for support. I turned to ask Lagorda what to do. Lydia was falling backward over the bench. I caught her, but her weight pulled me down, and I fell over with her. I must have fainted. I woke up suddenly. I was lying on a straw mat in the front room. Lydia, Rosa, and Josefina were sound asleep next to me. I had to crawl over them to stand up. I nudged them, but they did not wake up. I walked out to the kitchen, and Lagorda was sitting with the Gineros around the table. "Welcome back," Pablito said. He added that Lagorda had woken up a short while before. I felt that I was my old self again. I was hungry. Lagorda gave me a bowl of food. She said that they had already eaten. After eating, I felt perfect in every respect, except that I could not think as I usually do. My thoughts had quieted down tremendously. I did not like that state. I noticed then that it was late afternoon. I had a sudden urge to jog in place, facing the sun, the way that Don Juan used to make me do. I stood up and Lagorda joined me. Apparently she had the same idea. Moving like that made me perspire. I got winded very quickly and returned to the table. Lagorda followed me. We sat down again. The Gineros were staring at us. Lagorda handed me my writing pad. "The Nawal here got us lost," Lagorda said. The moment she spoke, I experienced the most peculiar bursting. My thoughts came back to me in an avalanche. There must have been a change in my expression. Pablito embraced me, and so did Nestor and Benigno. "The Nawal is going to live," Benito said loudly. Lagorda also seemed delighted. She wiped her forehead in a gesture of relief. She said that I had nearly killed all of them, and myself, with my terrible tendency to indulge. "To focus the second attention is no joke," Nesta said. "What happened to us, Gorda?" I asked. "You got lost," she said. "You began to indulge in your fear, and you got lost in that immensity. We couldn't focus our attention on the tonal anymore, but we succeeded in bundling up our second attention with yours, and now we have two faces. And now you have two faces." Lydia, Rosa, and Josefina stepped out into the kitchen at that moment. They were smiling and seemed as fresh and vigorous as ever. They helped themselves to some food. They sat down and nobody uttered a word while they ate. The moment the last one had finished eating, Lagorda picked up where she had left off. "Now that you're a warrior with two faces," she went on, "the Nawal said that all of us have to have two faces to fare well in both attentions. And he and Gennaro helped us to round up our second attention and turned us around so that we could face in two directions. But they didn't help you, because to be a true Nawal, you have to claim your power all by yourself. You're still a long way from that, but let's say that now you're walking upright instead of crawling. And when you regained your completeness and have lost your form, you'll be gliding." Benigno made a gesture with his hand of a plane in flight and imitated the roar of the engine with his booming voice. The sound was truly deafening. Deafening. Everybody laughed. The little sister seemed to be delighted. I had not been fully aware until then that it was late in the afternoon. I said to Lagorda that we must have slept for hours, for we had gone into the room before noon. She said that we had not slept long at all, that most of the time we had been lost in the other world, and that the Gineros had been truly frightened and despondent because there was nothing they could do to bring us back. I turned to Nestor and asked him what he had actually done or seen while we were gone. He stared at me for a moment before answering. "We brought a lot of water to the yard," he said, pointing to some empty oil barrels. "Then all of you staggered into the yard, and we poured water on you, that's all." "Did we come out of the room?" I asked him. Benigno laughed loudly. Benigno laughed loudly. Nesta looked up at Lagorda as if asking for permission or advice. "Did we come out of the room?" Lagorda asked. "No," Nesta said. Lagorda seemed to be as anxious to know as I was, and was alarming, and that was alarming to me. She even coaxed Nesta to speak. "We came from nowhere," Nesta said, "I should also say that it was frightening. All of you were like fog. Pablito saw you first. You may have been in the yard for a long time, but we didn't know where to look for you. Then Pablito yelled, and all of us saw you. But we've never seen anything like that." "What did we look like?" I asked. The Gineros looked at one another. There was an unbearably long silence. The little sisters were staring at Nesta with their mouths open. "You were like pieces of fog caught in a web," Nesta said. "When we poured water on you, you became solid again." I wanted him to keep on talking, but Lagorda said that there was very little time left, and for I had to leave at the end of the day, and she still had things to tell me. The Gineros stood up and shook hands with the little sisters and Lagorda. They embraced me and told me that they only needed a few days in order to get ready to move away. Pablito put his chair upside down on his back. Josefina ran to the area around the stove and picked up a bundle they had brought from Donna Soledad's house and placed it between the legs of Pablito's chair, which made an ideal carrying device. "Since you're going home, you might as well take this," she said. "It belongs to you anyways." Pablito shrugged his shoulders and shifted his chair in order to balance the load. Nesta signaled Benigno to take the bundle, but Pablito would not let him. "It's all right," he said. "I might as well be a jackass as long as I am carrying this damn chair." Why do you carry it?" Pablito, I asked. "I have to store my power," he replied. "I can't go around sitting on just anything. Who knows what kind of creep sat there before me?" He cackled and made the bundle wiggle by shaking his shoulders. After the Gineros left, Lagorda explained to me that Pablito began his crazy involvement with his chair to tease Lydia. He did not want to sit where she had sat, but he had gotten carried away, and since he loved to indulge, he would not sit anywhere except on his chair. "He's capable of carrying it through his life," Lagorda said to me with great certainty. "He's almost as bad as you. He's your partner. You'll carry your writing pad through life, and he'll carry his chair. What's the difference? Both of you indulge more than the rest of us." The little sisters surrounded me and laughed, patting me on the back. "It's very hard to get into our second attention," Lagorda went on. "And to manage it when you indulge as you do is even harder. The Nawal said that you should know how difficult that managing The Nawal said that you should now know how difficult that managing is, better than any of us. With his power plants, you learn to go very far into the other world. That's why you pulled us so hard today, that we nearly died. We wanted to gather our second attention on the Nawal spot and you plunge us into something we didn't know. We are not ready for it, but neither are you. You can't help yourself, though. The power plants made you that way. The narwhal was right. All of us have to help you contain your second attention. And you have to help all of us push ours. Your second attention can go very far, but it has no control. Ours can only go a little bit, but we have absolute control over it. Lagorda and the little sisters, one by one, told me how frightening the experience of being lost in the other world had been. The narwhal told me, Lagorda went on, that when he was gathering your second attention with his smoke, you focused it on a gnat. And then the little gnat became the guardian of the other world for you. I told her that was true. At her request, I narrated to them the experience Don Juan had made me undergo. With the aid of his smoking mixture, I had perceived the gnat as a 100-foot-high, horrifying monster that moved with incredible speed and agility. The ugliness of that creature was nauseating, and yet there was an awesome magnificence to it. I also had no way to accommodate that experience in my rational scheme of things. The only support for my intellect was to my deep-seated certainty that one of the effects of the psychotropic smoking mixture was to indulge me to hallucinate the size of the gnat. I presented to them, especially to Lagorda, my rational causal explanation of what had taken place. They laughed. "There are no hallucinations," Lagorda said in a firm tone. "If anybody suddenly sees something different, something that was not there before, it is because that person's second attention has been gathered, and that person is focusing it on something. Now, whatever is gathering that person's attention might be anything. Maybe it's liquor, or maybe it's madness, or maybe it's the narwhal smoking mixture. You saw a gnat, and it became the guardian of the world for you. And now, and do you know what the other world is? The other world is the world of our second attention. The narwhal thought that perhaps our second attention was strong enough to pass the guardian and go into the world, but it wasn't. If it had been, you might have gone into the world and never returned. The narwhal told me that he was prepared to follow you, but the guardian did not let you pass and nearly killed you. The narwhal had to stop making you focus your second attention with his power plants because you could only focus on the awesomeness of things. He had you do dreaming instead so you could gather it in another way. But he was sure your dreaming would also become awesome. There was nothing he could do about it. You were following him in his own footsteps. And he had been awesome. Well, let me try that again. You were following him in his own footsteps, and he had an awesome, fearsome side. They remained silent. It was as if all of them had been engulfed by their memories. Lagorda said that the narwhal had once pointed out to me a very special red insect in the mountains of his homeland. She asked me if I remembered it. I did remember it. Years before, Don Juan had taken me to an area unknown to me in the mountains of northern Mexico. With extreme care, he showed me some round insects the size of a ladybug. Their backs were brilliantly red. I wanted to get down on the ground and examine them, but he would not let me. He told me that I should watch them without staring until I had memorized their shape, because I was supposed to remember them always. He then explained some intricate details of their behavior, making it sound like a metaphor. He was telling me about the arbitrary importance of our most cherished moors. He pointed out some of the alleged maws of those insects and pitted them against ours. The comparison made the importance of our beliefs look ridiculous. Just before he and Gennaro left, Lagorda went on, "The narwhal took me to the place in the mountains where those bugs lived. I had already been there once, and so had everyone else. The narwhal made sure all of us knew where those those little creatures, although he never let us gaze at them. While I was there with him, he told me what to do with you and what I should tell you. I've always told you most of what he asked me to, except for this last thing. It has to do with what you've been asking everybody about. Where are the narwhal and Gennaro? Now I'll tell you exactly where they are. The narwhal said that you will understand this better than any of us. None of us has ever seen the Guardian. None of us has ever been in that yellow sulfur world where he lives. You are the only one among us who has. The narwhal said that he followed you into that world when you focused your second attention on the Guardian. He intended to go there with you, perhaps forever, but you would have been strong enough to pass. It was then that he first found out about the world of those little red bugs. He said that their world was the most beautiful and perfect thing one could imagine. So when it was time for him and Gennaro to leave this world, they gathered all their second attention and focused it on that world. Then the narwhal opened the crack, as you yourself witnessed, and they slipped through it into that world, where they are waiting for us to join them someday. The narwhal and Gennaro liked beauty. They went there for their sheer enjoyment. She looked at me. I had nothing to say. She had been right in saying that power had to time her revelations perfectly if I were going to be effective. I felt an anguish I could not express. It was as if I wanted to weep, and yet I was not sad or melancholy. I longed for something inexpressible, but that longing was not mine. Like so many of my feelings and sensations I had had since my arrival, it was alien to me. Nesta's assertion about Eligio came to my mind. I told Lagorda what he had said, and she asked me to narrate to them the visions of my journey between the Tonal and the narwhal, which I had had upon jumping into the abyss. When I finished, they all seemed frightened. Lagorda immediately isolated my vision of the dome. The narwhal told us that our second attention would someday focus on that dome, she said. That day, we will all be in the second attention, just like the narwhal and Gennaro are, and that day, we will join them. Do you mean, Gorda, that we will all go there as we are, I asked. Yes, we will go there as we are. The body is the first attention, the attention of the narwhal. When it becomes the second attention, it simply goes into the other world. Jumping into the abyss gathered all your second attention for a while. But Eligio was stronger, and his second attention was fixed by that jump. That's what happened to him, and he was just like all of us, but there is no way of telling where he is. Even the narwhal himself didn't know. But if he is someplace, he is in that dome, or he is bouncing from vision to vision, perhaps for a whole eternity. Lagorda said that in my journey between the Tonal and the narwhal, I had corroborated on a grand scale the possibility that our whole being becomes all second attention. And on a much smaller scale, when I got all of them lost in the world of that attention earlier that day, and also when she transported us half a mile in order to flee from the Allies. She added that the problem the Narwhal had left for us was a challenge was whether or not we would be capable of developing our will or our power of the second attention to focus indefinitely on anything we wanted. We were quiet for a while. It seemed that it was time for me to leave, but I could not move. The thought of Allegio's fate had paralyzed me. Whatever he had made it to, and whether he had made it to that dome of our rendezvous, or whether he had gotten caught in the tremendum, whatever that is, tremendum, the image of his journey was maddening. It took no effort at all for me to envision it, for I had the experience of my own journey. The other world of which Don Juan had referred practically since the moment we met had been a metaphor, an obscure way of labeling some perceptual distortion, or at least a way of talking about some undefinable state of being. Even though Don Juan had made me perceive indescribable features of that world, I could not consider my experience to be anything beyond a play of my perception, a directed mirage of sorts that he had managed to make me undergo, either by means of psychotropic plants or by means I could not deduce rationally. Each time that had happened, I had shielded myself with the thought that the unity of the me I knew and was familiar with had been only temporarily displaced. Inevitably, as soon as I had unity, it was restored. The world became again the sanctuary for my inviolable rational self. The scope that Lagorda had opened up with her revelation was terrifying. She stood up and pulled me off the bench. She had said that I had had to leave before the twilight set in. All of them walked me to my car and we said goodbye. Lagorda gave me a last command. She told me that on my return, I should go directly to the Gennaro's house. "We don't want to see you until you know what to do," she said with a radiant smile. Don't delay too long." The little sisters nodded. "Those mountains are not going to let us stay here much longer," she said. And with a subtle movement of her chin, she pointed to the ominous, eroded hills across the valley. I asked her one more question. I wanted to know if she had any idea of where the Narwhal and Gennaro would go after we had completed our rendezvous. She looked up at the sky, raised her arms, and made an indescribable gesture with them to point out that there was no limit to the vastness. End of chapter, end of book.